WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at fairtoflare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me, my special guest is Fat Man After Dark from the Future Endeavors podcast. And Fat Man, glad to finally have you on the show. How you doing?
Fantastic. It's great to be here. I know you've had that big jabroni DX Don Mega on a few times, so it's wonderful that we were able to work it out for me to come on, and I hope to be able to get to be on more than Don Mega. So he brags a lot about being on the show. So my goal is to, like, he has the multiple world titles, and I got to try to surpass that now.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that's really, like, worth necessarily those accolades, but I appreciate that. And we don't want him to get too cocky. So, you know, we definitely gotta, keep his head straight. Today we're talking about, the main event of WrestleMania 2, and it's Hulk Hogan against King Kong Bundy, and it's interesting in the sense that, like, a lot of the WrestleMania stories are, like, really, you know, particularly earlier, you know, these really epic, big, built-up feuds. You know, you think of Hogan Andre, Hogan Savage, Hogan Warrior to a certain extent, but Bundy, like, you know, he was certainly, you know, a major heel at the time, but he was just kind of like, you know, you almost could have picked, you know, any, you know, major WWE heel, you know, whether, you know, Kamala or Big John Studd or somebody like that. I mean, you know, Bundy was just kind of the right guy in the right place, I guess. And that's kind of what I always thought. And then watching the match itself, I thought, you know, like, I really was impressed with Bundy's performance and just, you know, how great he was, but we'll get to that. We're kind of, you know, I think both of us kind of started watching like around this time. This may have just even been a little before we were really getting into wrestling. Share some thoughts of, you know, just kind of the time period.
Yeah, absolutely. This would have been right before I became a big wrestling fan. I remember very well the build up for WrestleMania 3. When Andre came back and they did all the things on Piper's Pit with Jesse Ventura, Andre grabbing the chain and ripping it off and bringing out Bobby Heenan and everything leading into WrestleMania 3. So this would have been right before I really started getting into wrestling. And Hogan and Andre was really the feud that got me into it. And then as we were talking about a little bit before the show, you know, I remember being 8 or 9 years old. This would have been like 89 and 90, and going into a mom and pop video store and thinking it was so cool that I saw WrestleMania 2. I saw the original WrestleMania and WrestleMania 2, and I had never seen those. And I thought it was so awesome that I could finally see these matches and see everything. And I was very, you know, it wasn't like now where you have the internet and Wikipedia and people talk about things and can look things up on YouTube. You know, I really didn't know what to expect. I had no idea who was participating or that it was in three cities or anything. I could just go based on what was on the cover of the video box, for those of us all young enough and old enough to remember that. So that's what I really remember, is that kind of going into a video store and being so excited to be able to see WrestleMania on tape.
Yeah, and I would, you know, I was the same way, and I would rent those tapes over and over again, you know, a lot of them. So, you know, it was just, yeah, otherwise you couldn't see it, or even if you saw it one time, it's kind of hard to remember if you see it more than just one time. So, I do remember, like, I think one of my first wrestling memories is actually King Kong Bundy attacking Hogan on a Saturday Night's Main Event just a few weeks before. Hogan and Don Morocco were having a match, and then Bundy did a run in, and Morocco's basically holding him from across the post, and then Bundy keeps like ramming him repeatedly with avalanches to his back. And one little detail I like is that when Bundy is running toward him, Heenan like gives him like an extra push, like right behind him, like it would do anything, but it's funny to watch Heenan do that, you know. And this was obviously, you know, really during the time, you know, Heenan was the number one manager in wrestling, and certainly in WWF, and he was, you know, he had a, you know, big stable of wrestlers, Big John Studd, you know, as I mentioned, you know, a number of top heels, and kind of the whole thing was, you know, Heenan's top guys would go after Hogan, and then Hogan would beat them, and then kind of move on to the next guy, and they would rotate the other managers in here and there too, but, you know, Heenan was definitely, you know, the key. And of course Heenan and Hogan had a long rivalry dating back to the AWA days, you know, in the very early 80s, so, you know, they obviously worked together a lot and had a lot of chemistry. And, you know, Heenan was very believable in hating Hogan, even in the later years, you know, in WCW. So, yeah, I
remember when Bobby Heenan basically did like an I told you so when Hogan ended up joining the NWO, and basically feeling like after that, they've been 20 years of going after him, finally he was vindicated that he had been right all along and Hogan was this bad guy. And I remember laughing, thinking about that, because you're right, Heenan was the premier manager, and, you know, think of all the people that he managed that got into feuds with Hulk Hogan, going back to Nick Bockwinkel in the AWA, and, you know, moving on to King Kong Bundy and Andre and Haku, and, you know, fill in the blank. You're 100% right. And I just thought that was funny when he said, you know, he knew it. He finally was able to get a little bit of vindication after 20 years when Hogan turned heel and joined the New World Order.
Yeah, that's definitely a pretty awesome element of that whole thing. And it's great that, you know, Heenan was the guy who stayed consistent the entire time, you know, and I don't know, you don't get that kind of consistency in characters. You know, it seems rare anyway, where a character, whether, you know, heel or face, not that Heenan was really exactly ever a face, but that, you know, they were able to be, you know, have consistent motivations and kind of be consistently the same throughout that entire time, and it still makes sense. So
that's, yeah, absolutely, pretty
cool. Yeah. One other vignette they show kind of during the video package while they're setting up the steel cage is Hogan training like an insane man. You know, there's a doctor there in a Hulkamania T-shirt, and Hillbilly Jim there in his overalls. Apparently, the attire of this gym is very casual, and it kind of, the whole thing is like Hogan's like lifting all this weight with his back, even though he's got his injured back. I guess the idea is that, you know, he's, you know, going to be able to lift Bundy and, you know, pick him up, even though he has the injured ribs, which the ribs, of course, injured in the attack, as I described previously. So as far as the match goes, like I said, I was really surprised at how good this match really holds up. I mean, it's very energetic. It's very, you know, it's fast paced. Like Bundy works, he's very stiff. Like Hogan's, you know, shows more intensity than usual, and you know, and it's, you know, it's very much a, you know, 1986 WWF heavyweight style match. I mean, it's obviously not like, you know, Jushin Liger or Rey Mysterio or anything like that, but it's, you know, it's very fun, and it's very entertaining, and you know, I was surprised at how much I liked it. And, you know, as far as the another thing I you know, you mentioned, you alluded to the fact that WrestleMania 2 was, you know, three locations. This was the final, you know, basically three separate hours. The first hour, I think, was in New York. The second hour was in Chicago. And the third hour was in Los Angeles. And all of them had a guest commentary, or they had a mix of regular commentators and guest commentators. And the Los Angeles portion is Jesse Ventura, Lord Halford Hayes, and Elvira, the Mistress of the Dark, which
It's kind of hilarious, especially if you look at WrestleMania 2. It really is like a snapshot of the era. I think one of the other cities had I think Susan St. James.
Yeah, Vincent Susan St. James was the first one. Yeah,
Yeah, and you had the Where's the Beef lady from the Wendy's commercials for the Battle Royal in Chicago, that like came out and rang the bell. And I believe that's right, where she came out and said, "Where's the beef? Where's the beef?" And they came out. So WrestleMania 2, maybe of all the WrestleManias, is a great snapshot of the mid 80s.
Yeah, definitely. And the funny thing is, of course, you know, Elvira obviously has like the vampirist character, but like when during the match, like especially when, you know, when Bundy bleeds and Hogan's going after the cut, she like freaks out and like reverts to like the regular person, and she sounds quite frankly like, you know, a kind of like Trailer Park Trash with the way she's screaming, and it's funny, you know, just seeing her do that. I assume that she realized that it was, you know, obviously a work, but I don't know. You know, maybe they were a little more protective of kayfabe even at that point. Yeah. So maybe she.
Yeah, you don't know if they wanted to smarten her up at all. They might have tried to put a little bit of fear into her and said, "Oh, you know, be very careful. You don't want to talk to so and so because, you know, he may have come after you." And
you know,
it is a different world now where, you know, we know terms like kayfabe and work and shoot and.
Sure.
You know, high spot and things like that. It was certainly a different world in that time, even in 1986. So it's very possible she didn't really know what was going on, or she had a very dim idea of what was going on. And I thought of all the commentating teams for the three cities. I actually thought this one might have been the strongest. I know it's tough to say with that lineup, but for me, Jesse Ventura, I thought, really did a hell of a job on commentary for L.A.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch him kind of carry things, because Lord Alfred Hayes is fine, but he's definitely kind of awkward, you know, and you know, obviously carrying things for Elvira, like when she's trying to be funny, like even when it fails, Jesse kind of plays off it and, you know, is able to make it work. I mean, you know, obviously he's one of the greatest ever, but you know, usually he was working with a pro like Monsoon or Vince, you know, for whatever their flaws were, you know, knew what they were doing. And here, you know, that he had to deal with, you know, lesser, you know, commentators and was able to make it work. So I just kind of sort of a different environment for him in a way.
So, absolutely. And yeah. I think it really worked for him. And I always thought he was able to hold his own with whoever he was working with. And I think, you know, in this instance, he was the strongest link, and he really is able to make it entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's one thing I miss about kind of commentary of this era is like, it felt like they were not necessarily like rushing through and trying to like, it felt like you're just in wrestling, you know, maybe not like on a pay-per-view, more like on the regular TV, like you're trying to like cram an angle or cram like a storyline through somebody's throat, or you're just trying to like call like every single piece of action, when like I don't know, it was a much more relaxed sense of like more friendly kind of commentary back during this day. It was just sort of, I mean, it's like, even though, you know, some of the early WrestleManias, like most of the wrestling itself is, you know, nothing particularly special, I mean, just it's just really a joy to listen to, you know, like Gorilla and Jesse, or Gorilla and Heenan, or, you know, in different, you know, mixes that they had of just guys, you know, just kind of talking to each other, playing off each other, you know, it made it really fun and entertaining.
Absolutely. And I think that's really a lost art. And it can be blamed on, you know, one of many things. The business is so different. And, you know, you're not going to intimidate or talk down to Gorilla, Bobby Heenan, and Jesse Ventura the way we've heard that Vince gets on the gets on there and gets in people's ears. And that's one of the things that Mick Foley really disliked when he was doing commentary on SmackDown, is you have Vince screaming in your ear and doing those kinds of things. Obviously, you're not going to have that with someone like Gorilla Monsoon or Bobby Heenan or Jesse Ventura. And you're right. I think there's something going on in commentary where nowadays you have to call everything. You can't talk about things. You can't have that kind of relaxed atmosphere that you have in other sports, where you don't have to say every single move that goes on.
Yeah.
Where you can just talk, you can develop the characters and develop the storylines without having to say every time, you know, so and so, you know, does a kick and so does a slam and so does fill in the blank. And if you look, especially with Gorilla and the Brain, because they were so good together. But you see with any of those guys, with Vince and Jesse, with Gorilla and Jesse, Gorilla and the Brain, you can just, the commentary was accentuating everything. It wasn't on top of everything.
Yeah, that's
and a now I think, yeah, you think nowadays you have Michael Cole and whoever that likes to be on top of everything.
Yeah, and I mean, we're in an atmosphere where obviously, you know, you're building to shows, you know, basically every 4 weeks, and where, you know, back in the day, your important show was 3 months. So you had more time, and it was less pressure, I guess, in a way. And, you know, it was slower paced days, and it was more relaxed and more, you know, and it's kind of like moving from a small town to a big city, you know, which I guess, you know, in WWE kind of, you know, evolved from, I mean, it was a big wrestling promotion, but it was still, you know, a regional promotion, and, you know, kind of was obviously in the 80s, obviously expanding, but it's kind of slowly growing from, you know, a small town to, you know, a giant metropolis that it is now. And, you know, and in, when you live in a big city, life is faster. So.
No, it's a good analogy.
Thanks.
We don't get that on Future Endeavors because, you know, Don Mega can't put up those kind of thoughts together. So.
Well, you know, he has certain skills. We're not going to, you know, completely.
Yes, certain. He has certain skills. All right, that's for sure.
The other '80s elements I wanted to mention is Tommy Lasorda, the Los Angeles Dodgers manager, did the ring introductions. Ricky Schroeder is the guest timekeeper, and Robert Conrad, the actor, who I barely even know who that is the guest referee. And you know, I don't think it really matters who does the ring intros and who's the timekeeper. I mean, those jobs are not necessarily like vital in a professional wrestling situation. But the idea that you would employ an actor to be the guest referee in your biggest match of the year is kind of wacky.
Yeah, and I think that we talked about this a little bit. A little bit on Twitter today with some of the people talking about TNA, and now TNA is bringing in someone else from the Jersey Shore, and they're talking about, you know, when has WWE or WWF, you know, brought celebrities in these kinds of roles? And at the time, you know, they were really pushing it. Like, it happened a lot with the first WrestleMania, where you had, you know, someone like Muhammad Ali that was, you know, basically the enforcer on the outside of the ring. Billy Martin and Liberace and all these things, and you're following it up with having an actor as your referee. It really wouldn't fly today in WWE. They might bring someone in to do like what they're doing with the guest host, like a one kind of deal, but you don't see, you know, if the main event for this WrestleMania is going to be The Undertaker and Hunter, you don't expect to see, you know, Justin Bieber as the referee or no. Fill in the blank. And I think there would be a big uproar if they did something like that. So you're right. It's different. It's unusual. Wacky is a good way of putting it, to see stuff like that. And I think it kind of shows that, you know, Vince really wanted to try to make this entertainment and emphasize entertainment and emphasize mainstream entertainment, and he thinks getting someone like Robert Conrad involved and other people that's really going to be what gets it done. And as we've seen, he's, instead of bringing in all these celebrities as he did the first few years, he kind of tails off, and then you'll get some celebrities. You'll get a Pamela Anderson or an Alex Trebek or a Pete Rose, but you're not getting 10 celebrities. You're not getting a guest timekeeper and a guest ring announcer and a guest referee and guest commentators and guest valets and whatever. You're getting a few people. And I think it works a lot better for them to be in a support role and accentuate what's going on instead of being the main attraction.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. As far as the match goes, you know, it's you know, it's a good pace. It's pretty quick. You know, basically the story is actually Hogan really goes after Bundy for a while, and just really, you know, keeps, you know, really goes after Bundy, clotheslines him into the cage, hits the boot and chokes him with his strap. And then, finally, Bundy's able to kind of get a blow to the ribs, and that's, you know, obviously Hogan having the injured ribs, And, you know, Bunny takes control for a while and, you know, jams his foot into Hogan's face. I mean, you know, does a little bit of, you know, some pretty, you know, brutal, stiff, good-looking stuff. Then they kind of tease going for the door a little bit, but Hogan's able to grab his foot. Bundy, one thing I really liked was Bundy picking up Hogan into the body slam position and then just, you know, just kind of ramming him into the cage. And then that was another time when Bundy went for the door, but Hogan prevents him from escaping just at the last second. And I love Heenan screaming, "Damn it," like, you know, being really frustrated. Like, one thing that Heenan did, you know, as well or better than anybody, you know, outside of the ring is, you know, putting over, like, that he was, you know, obviously emotionally invested in what was going on, and also was like shouting strategy at his man and, you know, doing stuff like that, you know, which was really cool. And at that point, Bundy kind of rips up the tape and chokes Hogan out, and they, you know, keep kind of fighting for a while. And then eventually Hogan, you know, is able to make a comeback, staggers Bundy with a punch and then whips him hard into the cage. And that's when Hogan goes after the cut. And then Bundy takes some really good bumps, you know, being slammed in the iron bars. And then Hogan climbs onto the ropes and stands on Bundy's head and kind of chokes him for a bit. And then Hogan tries for a body slam, but then but unfortunately it's too much weight for the Hulkster, and he falls back. And then even so, Hogan is able to make a comeback and get the tape for a bit, but then but Bundy is able to stop him with a rake of the eyes. He gets an avalanche and a splash, but then and Hogan does his always whenever he was able, he was hit with a big splash, he'd always shudder a little bit on the ground. He did that with Bundy, did that with Earthquake, any fat guy that smashed him, Hogan always did the little shudder thing. And at that point, he is able to grab Bundy before he can slide out. But then Bundy hits another avalanche, which Hogan actually no-sells. And then Hogan makes a big comeback, hits a power slam, hits a leg drop, and then he climbs out of the cage to win. So, like I said, it's probably about a 12-minute match, but it's, you know, really one of the better ones that I can recall from that era. And Hogan had some pretty good matches in the, you know, in the 86, 87, 88, as far, you know, Saturday Night's Main Event matches with like Terry Funk and Harley Race and, you know, stuff like that. I found myself really enjoying Hogan more from this period than I, you know, would have expected, you know, a few years ago when I kind of, you know, went back and watched some of this stuff.
Yeah. You think that the good thing with Hogan is he really did have some interesting matches and have some unique situations where they, you know, in the mid 80s, 86, 87, you know, they brought in Terry Funk and they brought in Harley Race. So one of the criticisms of Hogan by so quote unquote smart marks or the internet wrestling community or whatever, looking back, is that, you know, for all of those years that Hogan was on top, he basically wrestled the same match against 300 and 400 pound men, which, you know, it is true. He did wrestle a lot of big men and had a very similar kind of match where, you know, he would come in and then they would take control and then he would Hulk up and get the leg drop and the win. But there's also a lot of gems in that era that are not exactly like that, that are very unique. And I appreciate the fact, and I've had an appreciation for Hogan during that era more. You know, as a kid, of course, I loved it. And then you get to into your moody 15, 16-year-old, your moody emo goth wrestling time, when you're kind of down on everything and you keep on waiting for Sting to come from the rafters. And then, you know, you kind of find a renaissance of what Hogan was able to do. And you understand why for all those years in the 80s, he was making a ton of money that's now in his wife's bank account.
Yeah. Well, you know, he yeah, like I said, I've gone back and really, you know, gained an appreciation for, you know, some of his, that he really had a lot of, you know, really fun matches. And, you know, and there were ones that were pretty standard formulaic and, you know, and into the 90s that kind of, you know, became even more so. But, you know, Hogan was, you know, a huge star for a reason, and it was, you know, a very good reason, because he was popular, he understood how to connect with the crowd, and, you know, and he made it work. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny we're talking about this match, because I forget who was it. Maybe it was Coco Beware, when Coco Beware was inducted into the Hall of the WWE Hall of Fame. It may have been someone else, but King Kong Bundy said something like, he never main evented WrestleMania, which is true, and King Kong Bundy did. And King Kong Bundy, for me, is, you know, he was always one of my favorites. I always liked the bigger wrestlers, and I always liked his look. I thought he had a great look with the singlets and the bald head, and he looked like, you know, that kind of an era of wrestler. He was just a bad guy. And this, you know, they put together this feud, and I can remember the first time I saw this and seeing Hogan's ribs taped and thinking, oh my God, what are they going to do to Hogan? How is he going to win? Now, if it's anyone but Hogan or John Cena or someone like that, the storyline is, you know, Bundy and Heenan have, you know, cracked his ribs and he has to wear tape, and they're going to work the ribs the whole match, and then they're going to get the pin and the victory. But there's no way that you're going to have a Hogan or a Cena, especially not in this era, you're going to allow the heel to win the title at the biggest show of the year, not in the WWF at least. For the match itself, you know, it's very well done, and they have the good spots where they, you know, are choking and everything. And it's funny because Hogan is supposed to be like the ultimate babyface, and you see Hogan do a lot of heelish things throughout his career. He's a kind of a crybaby, and he, you know, he does things that are very heelish, that if someone else did them, you know, you'd be screaming foul, and fans, you know, eat it up. And I love that Jesse Ventura in particular would point these things out. We always talk about it. One of my good friends, Southwest Dave, we're always talking about when Ventura was on commentary, and he did have some legitimate heat with Hogan, and he would say stuff like, well, Gorilla, Hogan is basically a criminal. Look what he's doing. Look what he's doing to this guy. And I always love that aspect of it, because Jesse wasn't just a heel that made no sense. He was a heel commentator that would make legitimate points about what the babyface was doing. And, you know, if you're choking someone, and if someone is choking you and then you respond, it's one thing. But if you're starting out and then the heel is choking the babyface in response, you can't really defend that. And, you know, you have those kinds of situations. And then I always think of the 92 Royal Rumble, where, you know, it's supposed to be every man for himself. And Sid throws out Hogan, and Hogan is the biggest bitchy, whiny, you know, guy in the world. And he grabs Sid's arm, and then Flair tosses him out. And the crowd goes kind of wild, and they've subdued it on the DVD. But if you ever heard the original reaction to when Ric Flair wins the Rumble in 1992, it's a really big pop. But I just think about that with Hogan, that, you know, we say it's every man for himself, and Sid's yelling at him, it's every man for himself, big boy, and that he can't accept that fact, and he has to cost Sid the match because he's bitter. And that was, you know, I'm veering off a little bit, but it makes me think about that with Hogan and Bundy, that Hogan does these pretty despicable things, and you're supposed to say, well, that's okay because Bundy and Heenan did these despicable things. That's like the pro wrestling logic, that, you know, if they cracked my ribs, I'm going to take a gun and shoot them, and that's fine because I'm the good guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely Hogan, you know, would break the rules, kind of like when he was pushed to that point, you know, a lot. And it, you know, it's funny that, you know, and actually Cena sort of does that a little bit too, you know, from time to time. It's interesting how that's, yeah, very much a pro wrestling thing where, yeah, you know, if the heel does it first, it's bad, but if babyface does it in response, then, you know, it's like, you know, taste of your own medicine kind of thing. So, and in fact, at the end of the match, which you were just talking about, Jesse sort of, you know, yelling at Hogan, goes after Heenan inside the cage and then basically destroys him inside the cage. And then Jesse's going off about how it's bad sportsmanship and Heenan didn't do anything to him and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and obviously, like, yeah, Jesse's right. But then again, you know, you could also justify it, you know, which the babyface's announcer usually did is like, well, you know, Hogan just, you know, doing what, you know, was done to him. So it's okay. So it's, yeah, it's funny how that works.
Yeah. It's the legal system in the wrestling world is very unique. It's very different than, you know, the idea of self-help is very much, you know, not just accepted, but encouraged in the pro wrestling world.
Yes, most definitely. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and what you're up to on the internet?
Well, I won't tell you everything I'm up to on the internet. But I will say, I like you alluded to, Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern time, we do the Future Endeavors podcast with my good buddy DX Don Mega and Corey Santiago. You can follow us on Twitter at Future Endeavors, all one word. You can follow me on Twitter at FatManAfterDark, all one word. Sunday nights at 11 p.m., if you go to future-endeavors.com, you'll be able to tune in. We also have our archives on there that you can listen to previous shows. We're going to have a couple of exciting things coming up. We've started a new tradition where we're going to start doing pay-per-view preview shows right before the pay-per-view on a Thursday or Friday before the pay-per-view, where we can get into things. And for WrestleMania, I think we're going to do a two-parter just because there's so much to cover for WrestleMania. We're also going to be running a couple of contests coming up. We're going to be giving away some trips to some WWE pay-per-views. We're going to be giving a trip for one person to Washington, D.C. for the Fatal 4-Way, and we're going to be giving a trip for two to SummerSlam. That should be awesome. You can also find me on the Fighting Geek MMA and Sports Entertainment blog at fightinggeek.com. I wrote a piece last week on the return of The Rock. I also wrote a piece about Jerry the King Lawler, and I did some things on the Royal Rumble. So fightinggeek.com has lots of MMA news and anything you want to get into in the world of sports entertainment. You can also find me on Facebook at FatManAfterDark.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for taking part in our WrestleMania Final Match series. Always appreciate it. And, of course, you can check us out at WrestleSpective.com or FairToFlare.com. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter /WrestleSpective for each one. So thanks a lot for listening, and take care.